Without trust, society stagnates.
Economies decline.
And businesses fail.
My Security Media believes through security,
trust between individuals,
organisations,
and government can be maintained. Welcome to the
Cybersecurity Weekly Podcast.
Welcome to My Security Media's Cybersecurity Weekly Podcast, and we're recording from Los Angeles, and I'm joined by Deepak Nanda, the president of the LA Venture Fund. Deepak, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you.
Mate, we've just spent some time up at Griffith Observatory, and we've had a really good chat and about all sorts of different things, but mainly around technology and both the pessimistic mindset of technology, but also from a VC's point of view, the opportunity. Maybe introduce the audience. We have a mix of Australian and American audience. I've reached out to you because you're in LA, and I'm on a bit of a city tour in California. LA Venture Fund, you're part of the Atlanta Venture Fund as well. Your role and some of your key interests as a VC in LA.
Absolutely. Just to kind of kick this off, you know, that trip up Griffith Observatory was great, and you picked the best day to come out here and enjoy some time in our city. So I definitely appreciate having you here and being able to host you and, you know, and talk to you about some of these things that are really passionate, that are a huge passion for me. Just to give you a little background, you know, I had set up my operations initially coming out of Atlanta, and we have a lot of support coming from there as well. And we still have that operation that's extremely demanding over there on those folks as well. With respect to venture capital in Los Angeles and what we're trying to do out here and what our objectives are, is we're looking for companies, right, that meet the criteria for our investing standards. Now, the types of companies that we're looking at, you know, are obviously cutting edge technologies, you know, advanced sciences, applied sciences. We're looking to drone technologies, life extension, home automation. Those types of innovations are extremely appealing to us, and you know, and I don't want to put a call out there to entrepreneurs, but you know, if you have that type of an approach to the market, and if you're an entrepreneur, you know, venture capital is definitely something that you want to consider, especially if you have an intention to scale your company up. So you know, our entire operation is designed to give entrepreneurs the resources and leverage those resources in order to be able to scale and grow fast.
Well, it's something that's been at quite a lot of discussion in Australia. The Australian government has an innovation strategy. One of those is in cybersecurity, but then they also have defence. What's some of your advice, I suppose, to kick off to, say, Australian startups? And again, we talk about cybersecurity, but security and cyber touches on pretty much most of the technology today. What's some of the advice, particularly, you know, do they come to LA or should they go to San Francisco? You know, we've got a landing pad. The Australian government has a landing pad. He's laughing. This is a bit of a Sydney, Melbourne, LA, San Francisco approach. What would be the attraction to come to LA?
That's a great question. I really like the way that you framed that question. I would love to shoot down our competitors up in San Francisco, but you know, I'll have to give credit where it's due. San Francisco is definitely you know, a major hub of technology, you know, and not just from a national perspective and United States perspective, but a national an international perspective, because what happens in San Francisco really does have a major impact on, you know, global technology. Now, why LA? And that's a great question. Los Angeles is very ripe for innovation. It's ripe for the taking. And there is a huge opportunity for people to leave their mark here. You know, Los Angeles generally is viewed as a very media-centered, Hollywood-centered, and entertainment-centered city. A lot of the activities that go on, you know, within our economy, our local economy, is geared towards catering to that aspect of our infrastructure. And, you know, technology in many ways has not necessarily had an opportunity to thrive here. Now, we can obviously talk about Snapchat, and that's one of the big companies that has decided to leave its mark on Los Angeles. And that's just the first of many, you know. From my perspective, and, you know, based on the question you asked earlier, which is also a really great question, what are some tips for entrepreneurs? What types of things do they need to be aware of in order to attract venture capital investments? My advice would be twofold. We talked about this a little bit earlier, but the best advice I think that, you know, for me, and having dealt with successful entrepreneurs is that you need to have the right team, right? Again, that sounds like, again, it's common sense.
Yeah.
But with respect to what types of technologies to focus on, there needs to be passion behind that innovation, right? You don't want to get into the game just to make money. That is something I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs make that mistake. You know, they do something because they're fueled by a desire to acquire wealth. Now, my philosophy and the philosophy of the entrepreneurs that I tend to surround myself with is a mentality that's geared towards unlocking their real potential and following their passion. You definitely need the right team. You're going to need to move fast. And, you know, don't be afraid of change. Don't be afraid to take input and get feedback from the folks around you. And if you have a strong business model, and you'll know because you'll see, you know, orders coming in or you'll see the need for scaling up. If you see that need in your company and you don't have the required assets in place or the required, you know, resources in place to be able to manage that accelerated growth, that's when you want to, you know, consider looking at VC options. And we're definitely one of those options.
Well, it is about having that business model that can scale, isn't that right?
Absolutely.
And so you can almost springboard out. You mentioned there's a part of LA that is looking to create its own mini Silicon Valley. Maybe just talk us through what your observations have been there.
I'm so glad you actually brought that up.
Thank you very much.
That area is referred to as Silicon Beach, right? And
so what's it called? Silicon Beach.
Silicon Beach.
Okay. Yeah.
Because you know, we're in LA, so we have to somehow add the beach to everything that we do. But Silicon Beach is definitely an investment hub that's taking place right out, probably about maybe 20 minutes outside of Los Angeles proper. But it's happening out in Marina Del Rey and Playa Vista. Playa Vista has millions of dollars pouring in to develop their technology hub. And we're seeing a lot of companies come from San Francisco to take advantage of that. One of the things that we're really proud of in Los Angeles is embracing technology. You know, we mentioned earlier that there's a little bit of a dichotomy in the way that these two cities are set up. You know, San Francisco is oriented towards technology from a very heavy perspective, and Los Angeles is geared towards entertainment media. And, you know, I think that in order for us to be truly successful as a city, the government definitely needs to understand that investing in technology is something that is going to help Los Angeles move into the future. And one of the beautiful things that we have had an opportunity to develop is that relationship with our government entities and partners. And it is very, 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 it's a very positive relationship that we've experienced having worked with city governments in order to develop these investment funds.
Are you part of the drive by the other cities? You know, Detroit, you mentioned even Atlanta. I imagine Washington, New York are doing similar things, and it's even happening in Australia where the Silicon Valley model has been trying to be replicated. Is that part of what you're doing?
And Chris, I'm so glad you brought up Detroit. Detroit is one of the cities that we are actually looking at creating another fund in Detroit, and I'll tell you why. You know, manufacturing in America has taken a huge hit over the past 10 to 15 years. You know, we've seen a lot of our manufacturing jobs go overseas, and we've seen that happen in Detroit explicitly. The reason I say this is because, you know, I'm not sure if your audience is aware, but Detroit is the hub for our car industry and our automotive industry.
It was.
Well played. And that's exactly what I'm speaking to, because when you have, you know, a large workforce that now no longer has the capacity to be involved in producing, you know, as part of our economy, you have, you know, you see what happens in cities like that. You see Detroit kind of crumbling and the infrastructure falling apart.
And is this what you're finding? Again, the same thing's happening in Australia where the manufacturing, particularly the car manufacturing industry, has gone away, but it's creating a new wave, and it's often government-led because the, you know, it's their job to create or make sure that the economy is going okay and create the jobs. Those manufacturing skills are being transferred into, you know, high-tech, more advanced manufacturing, which is servicing a larger sector, be it cybersecurity, defense, and some of the larger industries. Same thing happening here?
Again, something we talked about earlier, actually, was how there are folks that will say that technology takes people's jobs away. We talked about this. And I am a personal believer that technology adds jobs to the community and to the economy.
So you don't see robotics as a threat?
No, I do not see robotics being a threat to the working man's economic future, because there is so much left to do. We are at the tip of the iceberg in terms of rolling out our AI infrastructure, rolling out our Internet of Things, rolling out advanced technologies that are being utilized by consumers. And there is going to be an adjacent need for technicians, experts, engineers, scientists to come in and to actually manage some of these systems. So that the rise in the demand for those particular types of individuals and those roles and those jobs is going to, I don't think I can, I'm doing a good enough job expressing how much of a demand there's going to be.
Well, again, then it comes, that turns it around to the other aspect that we discussed, is education and the opportunities that technology and startups have in the education sector and how that is about to be transformed and disrupted. What are your thoughts there, and are you in any of that space?
I want to, before we go on, I want to talk about that Detroit situation that's going on there. When you're talking about Detroit, and I'm really, really glad you mentioned that, because that is really one of the cities that we're considering looking at in the future. The reason I emphasize this is because when you have a vacancy of intelligence and a vacancy of investment, you see buildings crumble. That's actually not, from my perspective, something that's necessarily bad. We look at it as an investment opportunity. We're looking at that as an opportunity to rise, help Detroit, for example, rise out of the ashes like a phoenix. Because, when you hit that rock bottom, and then you have entrepreneurs and investors looking at these buildings where they could set up the new startups, and they have the skills. They're coming from New York. They're coming from San Francisco. They're looking at Detroit, and there's a workforce there that's ready to be tapped into. They have some of the infrastructure elements in place. The city is going to back them.
And they're welcome. That's
and they're welcome. And they're coming in there, and they're really turning things around. I cannot understate how much of an impact entrepreneurship has had on, for example, Detroit. That is it's going to be a big difference there. It's going to be a huge difference there.
Well, I've heard Detroit mentioned a few times just this week being here. So
I'm really glad you brought that up. Yeah. But I'm sorry, what was the question?
The education sector. So with the change or the transformation of technology and the impact on the workforce, again, I mentioned I've been on the board of a school, and it was somewhat frustrating to see the curriculum and what the kids are given. It might be okay in the advanced schools, but in general schools, coding, robotics is only being just introduced now in Australia, and we've lagged. By the time these kids come out, the workforce may have already transitioned. The opportunities in the education sector, I suppose, is the question. And are you in that space?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for us, being a local, homegrown venture fund organization and operation, we have a vested interest in seeing our community thrive. Without seeing that part of seeing that piece of the puzzle, you lose sight of the fact that this is a human endeavor. Technology oftentimes removes that human element. And for me as a leader, it really involves unlocking the potential in others and sensing and nurturing that potential. Some of us, Chris, I imagine the story probably is true for you, that we've had a great educational background. We've had the opportunity to go to some really nice schools and some really good schools and institutions. And what I see, and we talked about this earlier again, that not every child learns the same way. Not every person who is exposed to a particular piece of information and how that information is delivered is going to impact the way that they interpret that information and they digest that information. And so for me, as a student who had to, I had to watch videos and I had to write things down and stuff. For me personally, the school system failed me in many ways. I'm a product of the internet. My, base of knowledge really comes from that compendium that exists, in cyberspace. And again, I don't want to gas the internet up too much, because there is a value in having that one-on-one mentorship that can come from, being with a teacher, right? But for me, it is looking to the future and looking at what technologies we have at our disposal that will really be able to unlock the potential in our schools. And this doesn't even need to be said, but children are the future. You know this. We all know this, and that's.
But you mentioned some of the tech that you've been seeing. I mean, my view is augmented reality is really going to, over the next sort of 5 years, start to create a whole lot of new ideas, and learning is one of those. And kids take on tech like it's drinking a glass of water. They just do it naturally. So for kids to be brought up in an augmented environment with almost avatar teachers, you've just kind of nailed it in that every kid can learn individually, and it's what information is put in front of them. I don't think, you know, I might be wrong, but and it's not even a question, this is more of a comment of, I don't think our curriculum is built for that environment. But it can be built quite quickly and rapidly. You've touched on some of the technologies, particularly in the human brain and computer type space. Maybe just talk us through what your observations
are. Again, I really appreciate you kind of guiding the conversation. You're doing a great job because is something that is so important, not to me just personally and not even from a venture fund perspective, but it is just so important to humanity to understand that technology is going to bring us to the next level. And what types of technologies am I talking about in specific? Brain-computer interface. And one of the most interesting consequences of investing in these types of technologies is the type of impacts it's going to have on people with serious health issues. And we're talking paraplegics, people that are quadriplegics, people that are paralytic. You know, brain-computer interface can open up a whole world of options for them to be able to, you know, regain their mobility and to actually re-experience the world from a whole new perspective. But going back to, you know, the types of technologies that we're interested in, augmented reality, for example, you mentioned earlier, is something that is going to be playing a huge role in the next 5 to 10 years and probably even further on down the line. I think that's a very limited perspective from, you know.
Oh, I think that's the rollout phase, yes. But after that.
Absolutely. And we're just getting started, you know. We talked about how 20 years ago, some of this stuff seems almost like science fiction, and yet we're here with, you know, Internet of Thing devices and, you know, and everything is interconnected. And a lot of times people that, you know, are living it have a difficult time kind of looking at the future and what's going to happen in the future.
Yep.
And you know this, and I know this because we're in the industry, but 20 years from now, it's going to be a whole different ballgame.
Let's touch on cybersecurity.
Absolutely.
And we haven't really discussed a lot of it in the past. Are you seeing much activity in the cybersecurity space in the startups? Or do you think maybe that is the advantage San Francisco, Silicon Valley has?
We are seeing several things happen, several trends take place. Security protocols are being introduced to a whole new market. Generally, that market was, you know, $10 million companies plus, right? It's very difficult for a company to manage a cybersecurity profile if they haven't really even considered establishing one in the first place. What we're seeing now, and again, this speaks to, you know, damage to reputation. If something happens and a, you know, customer's information is leaked from even a medium-sized business, that could be the difference between that organization surviving and that organization being instantly destroyed under weight of litigation or destruction of their brand image. So there's a lot of negative things that can come out.
So as a VC, you're looking for that cybersecurity aspect to your investments?
It's absolutely
on your radar?
Absolutely. Cryptography, cybersecurity, security infrastructure this is one of those things where it's not even spoken about because it's just so ubiquitous. It's just a part of our investment portfolio and our investment profile, looking for companies that are involved in cybersecurity. That it's there. The good thing is this. Here's the good thing. The good thing is people are focused on developing technologies to prevent intrusions and to increase people's security profiles and to reduce vulnerabilities. That's happening. That's a good thing. The difficult challenge in venture capital and cybersecurity is picking the right company, right? And for us, the good thing is that there's a lot of options to choose from. We're working with several partners. We've considered, we've considered developing an entire division of folks just dedicated to following the trends in cybersecurity, and the trends are changing on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I'll actually say it's come to mind. I was at the San Jose Net Events panel. They have a VC panel there, and the VC's actually raised that there's almost too many cybersecurity startups. What, I suppose as a close, we could, you and I could talk all day, literally, on this stuff. We've spoken for half a day already, Deepak. What are some of the really hot trends that you're seeing? What are some of the real hot techs, top five, that you see and would recommend us to follow?
Absolutely. Top five, I would say. First, cybersecurity. And the reason I say that is because, not because I'm on the podcast.
Because we're on the cybersecurity
not because we're on the cybersecurity podcast, but because I've seen the impact it's had on businesses that have implemented cybersecurity protocols. And I've seen the other side of that. I've seen companies suffer from a negligence and an ignorance of that aspect factored into their business model. And one of the most interesting things about cybersecurity and its implementation is that it's being more widely adopted, right? Yeah. Companies that never, ever had an opportunity to be able to invest in their cybersecurity profile are now taking it upon themselves based on the experience they've seen their competitors have by not doing it. They're now taking it upon themselves to actually establish those protocols, which is really good because there's a huge market for us to be able to speak to that.
Yeah.
You know, a couple other trends that I see, we mentioned BCI, right? Brain computer interfaces. I think that the mouse and the computer and the mouse and the keyboard in many ways are, it's old technology,
yeah.
Right? What's the word I'm looking for here?
Legacy?
Archaic.
That old. Okay.
It's very archaic, and we need to develop new ways to interface with computers.
Yeah.
One of the new technologies is brain-computer interfacing, right?
Yeah.
And that's going to be huge. Drones, really big. Laser technologies, really big. And one other technology I want to really put a little emphasis on is life extension. That, I think, is maybe the holy grail of venture capital. And again, don't quote me on this. A lot of the other VCs might get mad when I say this, but that is the light. That is the dragon that we're chasing. Because if I put down on paper and I present this to anybody saying, hey, look, we have a way in which we can extend your life by 10, 15, 20 years, that's instantly going to make millions and millions of dollars, if not billions.
Yeah.
It is scary to think about a world in which that type of technology gets, adopted, but it is inevitable too.
And you're seeing research in this area?
Absolutely. I believe it's Dr. Aubrey de Grey actually just received $1 million in investments to further advance knowledge on senescence and aging. Because that is, again, like I mentioned earlier, I think the holy grail of venture capital. Now, outside of that, there's home automation, self-driving vehicles. There's a lot of advancements in biomimetics and medical technologies that are taking place. Applied sciences is something that we're really considering. But if I had to pin down one specific thing that we're really interested in, I would say it's probably life extension.
Right.
Outside of cyber security, of course.
What about 3D printing, manufacturing, advanced manufacturing?
We're going to be here all day.
Yeah, sorry.
I really like that.
You missed 3D printing.
The great thing about being involved in venture capital, at least from my perspective, and I can't speak to the rest of my team, they're here for different reasons. Some folks on my team are very geared towards the engineering aspect and science and mathematics aspect of it. I'm geared towards business and building those personal relationships and nurturing leadership. You mentioned 3D printing, and one of the most interesting aspects of venture capital is we have the opportunity to work with so many different types of leaders and so many different cutting edge technologies. And for me, being involved in future studies and analyzing trends in technology is going to be critical to how we structure our investments.
Yeah.
3D printing was something that was science fiction, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Now it's being widely adopted. I would not be surprised if the 3D printer is as common in the future household as a toaster.
Yeah,
that's going to happen. It would not surprise me at all.
Your fund is raising up to $500 million, starting with $250 million.
We're looking at money from Qatar
that
is being funneled in. We're looking at money from the East Coast, of course, and obviously, one of our biggest stakeholders is the city of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I want to definitely emphasize that because without the city of Los Angeles' blessing and without their guidance, I think that we would be at a little bit of a disadvantage. And that's something that a lot of venture funds are not doing because they are strictly focused on producing results for the shareholders. And they are not vested in seeing entrepreneurs grow from a grassroots local perspective. And, and this goes back to the education piece we were discussing because one of the most important and one of the funnest things I get to do is get to meet with young entrepreneurs who, I consider myself a relatively smart guy, but some of the folks who I get a chance to meet with are so outrageously talented and outrageously intelligent that it makes me feel like I need to go back to school. You know?
That does scare me sometimes too, where you do meet someone who's really
talented. That goes back to education, right?
Yeah.
The more we invest in our education system, the more we invest in our community, and the more we take care of what we have directly in front of us, the more it all comes back around, and the more access we have to creating something even more more amazing.
Deepak Nanda, thank you very much for joining us, the president of LA Venture Fund. If you want to find out more information, it's laventurefund.com. And on Twitter, he is D Unlimited, and worth checking out, 300,000 followers. So, Deepak, thanks very much for joining us, mate. It's been a pleasure.
I'm really glad that you got to come to LA and kind of, you know, sit down and talk to me about
some of these things. For looking after me on the afternoon. It's all good.
I appreciate it.
Cheers, mate. Ciao.